guest and welcoming you to the LL Research Radio program In the Now, Q&A with Carla and crew. Today is Tuesday, August 5th, 2014. Carla L. Ruckert is an author, mystic, seeker, and primary channel for LL Research. The crew in the title refers to those of us at the LL Center, beginning with Jim McCarty, Carla's husband, scribe for The Raw Contact, and president of LL Research. Gary and I, devoted seekers of the Law of One, manage LL from the home office. LL Research is a nonprofit organization dedicated to freely sharing spiritually oriented information and fostering community, and towards this end has two websites, the archive website llresearch.org and the community website bringforth.org. Together, they offer over 1,300 channeling transcripts, 11 publications, the Law of One material, interviews, speeches, forums, blogs, chat rooms, and more. We will be discussing questions that come from you. If you would like to ask us a question live on the air, please call 646-595-2294 and press the 1 key when prompted. Again, that number is 646-595-2294. If interested in submitting a question when we're not on the air, please visit our show's webpage at blogtalkradio.com/LLResearch. When submitting questions, please remember that this is a Law of One Q&A. Try to keep your questions as spiritually oriented as possible. Again, I'm Austin, and we're talking with Carla L. Ruckert and the home crew of LL Research. We all here and ready to go?
We're here.
Yep.
I am ready.
Certainly are.
All right. We can jump into the opening riff, and we have a short quote from the September 22nd, 2007, to get us started. Kuo says, "It is consciousness which lives the life, whether or not one is conscious of one's own consciousness."
Thank you, Austin. This isn't just playing with words. So I'll ask you a series of questions. When you were a little one and your parents told you what to think about everything and you asked so many questions and just drank up information like a sponge, was your consciousness living your life as far as you know, or were your parents' answers living your life? Later on, in school, you had wonderful teachers, I hope, that answered some questions for you, and mentors that you found on your own, whether they were teachers or fellow students or whoever. And they offered you more answers. At that point, were you living your life in consciousness, or were you living their answers? And as you got out of school and began working for yourself, whether you worked for someone else or whether you had your own, whether you had a 9-to-5 or whether your work was a little different than that, you had taxes and insurance and bills to pay of all kinds. And so often, were you your consciousness living your life, or were your obligations and responsibilities? It's very difficult at any age and under any circumstances gently or forcefully to move away from easy answers that the society is all too happy to give us. And begin to think for ourselves, as they say, out of the box. Because so often when you try to think for yourself, you end up finding answers from those who were rebels within society. But you just switched from the society to the rebels without ever forming an original you. That's what you're looking for. When you start seeking, no matter what else you're seeking. You're seeking yourself, to know yourself. You're seeking to be yourself. You're seeking to fall in love with yourself. You're seeking to play with yourself, to enjoy yourself. And then, as yourself, you can turn and address the questions that you may have. Not looking for other people's answers, although they may be inspirational and lead you to a feeling that you have on your own. But primarily seeking for something that wakes up your essence, that brings you to a legitimate, honest feeling of selfhood. When you find that, you've come closer to finding the answers than you will any other way. Because you, the self that moves from intuition, that dreams and has visions, you are that which gives your discernment legitimacy. You're moving ever more into the sunshine of your own being. It may feel like you're seeking meditation or creator. These are all aspects of yourself, your own consciousness. I love that word, consciousness. It implies that you're conscious. It implies that you have a conscience. And it implies that these are yours, no one else's. How people love to diddle with us. Have you ever noticed? Oh, let me tell you how it really is. I know the truth. I'll tell you. Stay away from people like that. People who are searching. Because their questions are closer to the answers than other people's answers. Enjoy your consciousness. Enjoy your life with eyes wide open. In the moment. In the now, as Gary loves to say, and as our program is called, In the Now. And don't listen to me or anyone else tell you what anything is. Listen to the discernment of your consciousness. For in its unexplored mysteries, sirs, you are your own answer. How hard it is to realize that. No, you want it out there. You want it made of wood or gold like Baal. But you can't make truth an idol. You can't find truth in an idol. Scoot around on someone else's coattails for a long time. One's favorite authors offer that. And scooting along, it feels wonderful. You know their truths. Remember that you're finding your truths. And at some time, you're going to have to, with full respect, step away from those coattails in order to go deeper into yourself. Are you? I wish for you. I wish for myself. I wish for us all a wondrous, sacred journey.
Thank you, Carla. Moving on to our questions for the day. Our first question or questions come from username Your Other Self, Thea Bringforth. And Your Other Self asks about four related questions, so we'll tackle them one at a time. The first part, they say, my question is about the Orion group, more specifically the constellation Orion's Belt and its alignment with the pyramids of Giza. I'm curious if there is a connection between the Crusaders and this particular constellation. There is a part in the Ra material where Ra refers to those planetary social memory complexes of the so-called Orion constellation, but I don't know how much confirmation that is. Jim or Carla, do you know where the term the Orion group came from before the Ra material?
Well, I first ran into it in books by George Hunt Williamson. The guy's real name, by the way, is Mikhail Dobrynovich, and he is a prince from Eastern Europe, but he emigrated to America a long time ago. He wrote such wonderful books as The Road in the Sand. Jim, what are some of his other titles? They're wonderful books.
Secret Places of the Lion, Other Tongues, Other Flesh.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And his body of research is the body that another author stole and wrote Chariots of the Gods, various things of the gods, after he wrote that and it got popular. But everything that he was telling about, I saw in Williamson's books in the 50s and 60s. You know, they were published then. And Williamson did his own research starting in the 50s with radio experiments where he actually got recordings of what seemed to be transmissions from elsewhere using radio waves, which seems impossible, but that's how he began. I remember it's a little thin green book, and I haven't seen that book, Mick, in 20, 30 years. It's possible that somebody borrowed it and never brought it back. We've lost a lot of books that way. But it was about the radio transmissions. Do you remember that book?
Yeah, but I haven't seen it either for a long time.
Yeah. I'm not hearing you through the phones, by the way. Is anybody else? Is he okay?
Yeah, I hear him through the phone.
Okay, good. So, anyway, I don't know where in those books he dealt with the Orion Constellation or the so-called Orion Group, but it's the first place I heard the term. And it was fairly commonly used in the books written in the 50s, which, of course, are mostly out of print. But, I mean, that's where it all started. I know that Williamson's books, some of them at least, are still in print on Amazon. I checked about 2 years ago. And there were paperback versions of a couple of them that had gotten to be classics.
Gary, do you have any information?
About the pyramids' connection to the Orion constellation, on the Giza Plateau there are two of the larger pyramids that are completely in line with one another. That is, a straight line can be made through their apex, the pyramid of Khafre and the Great Pyramid of Cheops, and then the third, smaller pyramid of Menkaure is offset from that line. And likewise, at Teotihuacan, which is, I want to say, Aztec City. It's outside of Mexico City.
Is that the Pyramid of the Sun?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's Aztec.
Pyramid of the Sun, Pyramid of Quetzalcoatl are in alignment. And then the third one is offset, called the Pyramid of the Moon. And both of those patterns mirror exactly the Orion's Belt, with two stars in alignment and a third offset from those two. Why that is, that's the round.
The angle made by the two offset lines the same in each?
Eyeballing this image, yes. Whether that's accurate. I had read previously through Graham Hancock's work that the Giza Plateau does match the angle.
It's certainly fascinating. I have no idea as to what the relationship might be, but it's certainly provocative. Now, I will say this. Just because it's called the Orion Group or the Orion Empire does not mean that it's made up strictly of those from the Orion constellation. A lot of times you'll get something named after the first group, you know, the first members of a brotherhood or confederation. Others join, but it's still called the old name. So I think that's probably the way it got started. It probably does include some members of the Orion Group, but just as well, it probably includes members of whatever we're part of, you know, the Milky Way or whatever.
Yeah, that's a part of the quote that I was referring to in the raw materials, actually, about that when Don asks about the Southern Cross, which supposedly, I guess, is another negatively oriented group or term for some negatively oriented group.
Yes, it is. Uh-huh.
Ra, the full quote is in session 62, question 16, Ra responds, "These you mention of Southern Cross are members of the Orion Group. It is not, shall we say, according to understood wording, that a group from various galaxies should be named by one." And galaxies there, I think Ra is using the term galaxy to define solar system. However, those planetary social memory complexes of the so-called Orion constellation have the upper hand and thus rule the other members. You must recall that in negative thinking there is always the pecking order, shall we say, and the power against power and separation. So supposedly, if there are memory complexes from the Orion constellation, they rule the roost in the Orion Confederation. As far as like a shallow kind of correlation to the pyramids and the constellation itself, one explanation I've heard has to do with a way that supposedly Freemasons mark the date of their work. And you can see this on the Hoover Dam, is that they are aware of how the nighttime sky kind of shifts as time goes on in very long spans of time. And so you can kind of date something based on where a constellation is rising in the sky at a certain place in time. And one speculation is that the three pyramids were made to date it to that certain time, which would be something like 10 to 12,000 years ago. And the same people would speculate that the Sphinx, which they feel used to be a full lion, would correlate with Leo at the same time that the Orion constellation would correlate with the pyramids. But that doesn't have much to do with the Orion Confederation. And one other small bit that I got, I've always been sort of curious about how it would be a whole constellation or a group within a constellation that would be service to self-oriented. And then I remember that there is a part in the raw material where Ra talks about how the closer Logoi are in proximity, the closer they are in archetypes. So maybe there is the Logoi around that area in or around the Orion constellation have an archetypal mind that is more conducive to service to self activity. And since they're in the same proximity, they share a similar archetypal mind. Not the same exact, but similar. That's about all I have to say about that. Anybody else have anything to add?
Just that in the Orion constellation, there are very likely many positively oriented planets as well. It's just that the most powerful and ruling negatively oriented group is located there, so they get the honor of naming everyone.
Yeah, to extend what Jim was saying, I had wanted to add that I looked up the Orion constellation, and apparently there are seven major stars in the constellation that's visible to our eyes, the two shoulder stars, two at the base, and then the three of the Orion's belt. But technically, the constellation encompasses 221 stars. And I looked at a list of those, and those stars range anywhere from 26 light years to Earth, if that chart was correct, to 32,000 light years from Earth. So it's a big global, or maybe not global, but it's a big address. And like Jim was saying, maybe that negative empire originates from somewhere within there, but it doesn't encompass every single star in that area. And I note that, too, because we get some questions every now and then that another channeled source will mention beings from Orion. So this the seeker is interested in knowing the correlation to the Law of One, because the Law of One says negative entities come from Orion. So like Jim says, it's a big area, and there's plenty of room for a multiplicity of social memory complexes and groups.
Yeah, there is a lot of lore and other channels that refer to positive beings from the Orion constellation. So I'm sure that there's a multiplicity of populations. Your other self goes on to ask another question, a semi-related question, quoting a raw material quote from Session 53, Question 10. Don asks, do any wanderers of a positive polarization ever encounter a so-called close encounter with the Orion or negatively oriented population? And Ra responds, I am Ra. When it occurs, it is quite rare and occurs either due to the Orion entity's lack of perception of the depths of positivity to be encountered, or due to the Orion entity's desire to, shall we say, attempt to remove this positivity from this plane of existence. Orion tactics normally are those which choose the simpler distortions of mind, which indicate less mental and spiritual complex activity. And your other self asks, I'm curious what a positively oriented wanderer would experience if they were contacted by an Orion entity. Does anybody have any clue?
Well, I know that there are some negatively oriented, let's not say Orion. I don't know if every single negative entity is an Orion group member, but we've had negative entities attempt to contact us, and I send them away. I just tell them, go away. And they have to, because of the strength of my commitment to who I am and the way I challenge. So they just go away. Now, outside of the very formal situation where you're attempting to channel and you're trying to decide if who you've got on the horn is positively or negatively oriented, is worth talking to as far as you're concerned. It's a lot harder, of course, sometimes to know that you're dealing with a negative entity right away. Because they are very clever, I've read channeling transcripts where you could see or feel the energy shift from positively oriented to somewhat negatively oriented within, you know, even one transmission, and mostly it was brought about by someone answering a very specific question. Or asking a question about the future, which was fear-based.
In the quote that your other self offers, Donna asks about a close encounter. So I think that maybe your other self is curious about
close encounters.
Yeah, the more
we did run into a guy that had an experience with what I thought was probably a very service to self-oriented group, and this guy was taken on board. He was a very countryman. He was a truck driver, and his eyes were full of light in remembering this, and the woman, this very beautiful woman. He said everything that you'd ever imagined a beautiful woman to be, she was. And it had a very strong odor, as I recall, and he loved it. It made him want to have sex immediately, even in the absence of any invitation. But she invited him to come aboard the spacecraft, which he did in a heartbeat, and have sex with him. And he said he just hoped she came back. My guess is they were using his seminal fluid as a means of human DNA so that they could put it into their DNA and reanimate their species, which, according to what we've heard before, is in some cases is wearying, you know, is becoming less vital, and the species is basically dying out, and they're trying to revitalize it with human DNA. Go on beyond that, and why they want to do it, you know, breaks down into people that don't think it's just to reanimate their bloodline, but also to take over Earth at some point, using people that have been generated from this seminal fluid in many cases, and ultimately go back to Earth. You know, you can't tell them from Earthlings, and take it over.
Speculation in UFO mythology.
But this I know, the guy had a real experience. I mean, there was no question in his mind.
And that's a pretty common theme from my own research of abductees and what seem to be negative encounters, especially men. There will be very attractive female entities that want to have sex with the men. And there's a lot of men that claim to have encountered that. So that's a really common theme in abductions. Anybody else have anything to add to that particular question?
Well, of course, in my case, and in the case of those in the original group that talked to Ra, me and Jim and Don, we mostly experienced negative entity of the unseen variety. We just wanted to put out my light. They just wanted me to die. It was a very ruthless challenger to my very existence. It, if it couldn't have the light that I had, it wanted it to go out.
And wasn't there a part where Ra said that this, especially the fifth density negative entity that was attracted to you guys, was losing polarity because he was not able to put out the light and he wasn't able to control?
Right. That's what happens if a negatively oriented entity runs into a positively oriented person. They do lose polarity. And so generally, if they discover a positively oriented entity, they just don't appear to them. I know we had this Morris Hoagland, who's in our book, Secrets of UFO, and he had this experience where he was playing with a group of guys, and there were about, what, seven or eight? Is that right, Mickey?
I think that's right.
And not very old, and they were just playing, and this group appeared to, you know, the space. They saw the spaceship, and then they saw the beings, couldn't see them. So he went off to play by himself because he couldn't get interested in what they were doing because he couldn't see it. So the same thing appeared to him, but it was positively oriented. And all it did was look into his eyes, and it awakened something in him. And from that time on, he became a seeker. So that's another way that that can play out.
Qualifying what type of contact that yourself is interested in would be helpful. Like Austin was saying, did they specifically mean close encounter? Were there some kind of more tangible, physical, almost face-to-face meeting? Or does he mean the sort of contact that the positively oriented seeker receives as they go about the path of seeking and are greeted by negative entities? In the latter sense, the contact, you might say, that a positive entity receives via negative greeting, that would result in some form of exacerbation of that positive entity's free will that causes, or at least intends, to lead that positive entity astray from the path of service to others, or in extreme cases, as Carla was describing, to remove the light of that positive entity. in terms of the entity who is channeling or offering positive information to his group, Ra does describe a type of meeting between the positive entity and the negative entity. In a few different instances in the Law of One, they say, it is entirely possible for the untuned channel, as you call that service, to receive both positive and negative communications. If the entity at the base of its confusion is oriented towards service to others, the entity will begin to receive messages of doom. That's in 12.15. And in session 16, Ra says, in speaking about the messages of doom is informative, and from that you can extrapolate that what happens when a positive entity is contacted by a negative entity, then there may be some sense or some message of fear or doom or foreboding, something that speaks to the positive entity for the need to protect the self, defend the self, seek shelter, etc., from a fear-based sort of consciousness. Among some examples, I don't know.
It's also the aggrandizement of self that can be offered. The next part of the question is kind of similar. Your other self says, Ra also states, similarly, a mistaken Orion contact with highly polarized positive entities can wreak havoc with Orion troops unless these crusaders are able to depolarize the entity mistakenly contacted. This occurrence is almost unheard of. Therefore, the Orion group prefers to make physical contact only with the weaker-minded entity. And in this quote, the key points would be mistakenly contacted and physical contact. And so your other self goes on to say, how would this contact wreak havoc on Orion troops? It seems to me that it would be in the interest of a service to others wanderer to somehow trick the Orion group into making contact with them and risk being depolarized.
I don't think that those of positive orientation go on the offensive in terms of trying to depolarize negative entities.
That's right. You'd be doing a negatively oriented thing in order to trick negatively oriented entities.
Yeah,
and therefore, you'd be the one that'd be losing polarity.
Trick implies manipulation and dishonesty, which are not necessarily hallmarks of the
Those
service
are no-nos,
to others
yeah.
entity. And I'm not sure why it would necessarily be in interest. He asks, how would this contact wreak havoc on Orion troops? And I'm guessing it's just that a extremely positively oriented entity would have the foundation, balance, and will to just not be depolarized in any sense, and being exposed to that sort of orientation and being unable to do anything in the face of it would depolarize in an extreme way the Orion, but that's just me kind of guessing.
Well, I think it's a fairly good guess. That would be, and anyway, that would be my guess also, that they would lose polarity, and if it was a really good positively oriented deal, they would lose a lot of polarity. And they're not in the habit of losing any kind of polarity. They're in the habit of building themselves up. And it would, I think they would think it was just disastrous.
Mm-hmm. But, yeah, mainly I think tricking the Orion group is probably not something that a service to others entity would focus on. I would probably think that service to others entities would focus on serving others directly rather than some sort of indirect trying to fend off the Orion group.
Right.
And the next is sort of unrelated that your other self asks, can probably be a quick one. They say, I'm also having trouble understanding the random number generating system used to allow breaches in quarantine so free will of Orion entities is not interfered with. The specific Ra quote, Don asks, what is the source of this random number generator? And this is what the Guardians use, the Guardians who allow certain UFOs and groups into Earth. Ra described their method as random number generator. And Ra says, the window phenomenon is an other self phenomenon from the Guardians that operates from the dimensions beyond space-time and what you may call the area of intelligent energy. Like your cycles, such balancing, such rhythms are as a clock striking. In the case of the windows, no entities have the clock. Therefore, it seems random. It is not random in the dimension which produces this balance. That is why we stated the analogy was within certain limits. So my best guess is that there is an intelligence that reads the balance of Earth and that will determine what sort of sources should be allowed in and shouldn't be allowed in, but none of these sources that are attempting to get to Earth understand the algorithm that it uses to determine this balance. They basically have no way to determine when a window will open, and so it just seems completely random from our perspective or from their perspective. But essentially, I guess you could say it's like the Creator is offering this balance and making sure the balance is enforced. That's my best guess.
I think it's a great guess, and it's a lot better than my original thought, which was just that, when you buy a lottery ticket and somebody's got the lottery ticket number, but you just don't know who. And so, you know, you either get the winning number or you don't get the winning number. And chances are you won't get the winning number. But the degree of chance that you won't get the winning number, I figured, was based on how strong the calling was for negatively oriented material. And the stronger the calling was, the more possibilities there would be. There were more windows that there would be. Does that make sense in any way, or is that just muddled thinking on my part?
It makes as much sense as anything I could think of. Jim, do you have any ideas?
Well, the only comment I had was that at one point when Ra was talking, I believe it was about graduation and the entities that provide the light emanations by which is determined whether or not the graduating entity can go into another density or be graduated. The ones providing the light were from another octave, and it might be that those also providing the random number generator could be from another octave. That's just a guess, too.
It's an interesting point, and I think there can be a confusing thing in the Ra material, because I believe that Ra refers to two separate groups as guardians.
Definitely.
Those guardians from the another octave that you're talking about, and they also talk about guardians that do the, I don't want to say bidding, but help the council, and
right.
One of their things that they do is help protect Earth. But the fact that this random number generating system comes from what Ra called the area of intelligent energy, there might be some sort of correlation there as well.
Right.
Gary, any ideas?
None, nothing. Everything you guys said sounds great. I don't have anything intelligent to add to that.
Nothing from your intelligent infinity.
One more thought about wreaking havoc on Orion troops that I wanted to add, and that's that another way one might consider that it wreaks havoc is that the Orion troops fail in their intended mission. I mean, they set out to conquer, and they are unable to conquer because the positive entity is protected by their tuned vibration to love, so they do not conquer. And presumably, when they set out to conquer, they didn't realize that they would encounter such love and positivity. So all of their plans are now in disarray, and they have to retreat and go somewhere else. So that may be a sort of havoc for the Orion troops.
Plus the fact that it seems to me that losing faith would be big in a negatively oriented system where you're always trying to have more and more, shall we say, honor. You'd be losing faith.
That makes sense, too. Okay. Thank you for your questions, your other self. Our next question comes from Joshua W. via Facebook, and it is also about negative greetings, so we can have a negative greeting-themed show.
Oh, great.
Joshua asks, I'd really appreciate to know about how the negative greetings affected each of you, since they were occurring frequently. For those of us interested in psychic self-defense, this seems to be a unique case that has much to teach. A fifth density negative entity greeting doesn't seem easy to fend off. And his first question is, were any of you challenged to have the right attitude towards these greetings? And I believe he's addressing those towards you, Carla, and you, Jim.
Well, the general principle with any type of a greeting is that if there is any chink in your armor of light that is there because you chose it, whether it's physical disabilities previous to the incarnation, such as Carla had, or you're working on something in your incarnation that could lead to a disharmony with somebody else. These types of choices or movement away from the normal armor of light are usually what were intensified, like a magnifying glass was put on them, and they just got bigger. For Carla, she had problems with her various joints and appendages becoming very painful, and when she reached for a gallon of milk at one point, it was enough to cause a large strain in her muscular skeletal system of that, I think, was her right arm. And that, of course, was a target for Orion entities to enlarge upon, and any type of...
Yeah, I think I originally, and eventually I had to get an operation to rebuild that wrist.
Right.
So it was kind of disastrous.
And then, of course, there's the one that we've talked about earlier about when you went on the walk and you had trouble breathing because we had a problem with the communication. The blue ray throat chakra was suffering a blockage that wasn't usual for it at all. And since it was a departure from what was possible and usual, that was intensified so that you had difficulty breathing. And if you had fought against it and lost your cool, you might not have breathed any more calm and realized, well, if I pass out, I will wake up.
I'll be able to breathe. My body will know how to breathe. Yeah, oddly enough, and I don't know if it's, I think it's pretty normal, really. When you discover that your back is against the wall and you're being challenged on are you going to be scared? Well, it does is make you harden or firm up your desire to be strong. You say, well, no, I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to have a problem. I'll be as strong as I can be. And nuts to you, buddy. You know, it's like there's some anger there, part of my reaction. Wouldn't you say that, Mickey?
Yeah, I think so. I don't think it's necessarily the reaction you want to stay with, but it's easy to come up with that to start with.
Yeah.
As far as a proper attitude towards the greetings go, what sort of attitude do you think is proper? I noticed in the material... you all started referring to it as a companion rather than like an enemy, and you started calling it greeting instead of attack and stuff like that.
Right.
And I was trying to keep your heart open is a very clear indication from the Ra group. It's very, overriding, meaningful, at least to me. And so we were all trying to keep our hearts open.
And see the negatively oriented entities as another portion of ourselves, as a portion of the Creator, as everyone is, and not to ever forget that, so that though you protect yourself with an armor of light, you also bid that entity well as they go on their way.
All right. Joshua goes on to ask, do you believe these entities who... we're greeting you are what religions refer to as demons.
No, not at all. Demons are within a whole different system of mythology and lore and have to do with the Christians for the most part. But in any religion, there are demons specific to that religion. The UFOs are apart from any religion, and I wouldn't I don't think you could get far trying to make them into demons. They're just negatively oriented entities that are pursuing what they believe to be the right attitude, the truth, so to say.
Yeah, I'm not a demon aficionado or expert, but I get the feeling from demons that they're not that intelligent. They're maybe on the negative path, but they're sort of pawns, and maybe they can be bid by negative entities to do certain things for them, but they're not in charge.
That makes sense to me. I also get a strong sense of thought forms when it comes to demons, that they're given so much power just through the belief in them.
Right.
Joshua goes on to ask, did the entities invade your dreams in any way?
Just once for me. There may have been others, the only one I can remember. And I think Gary covered it in the interview. I had a dream during the rock contact that Don and Carl and I were sitting on the front porch of a cabin out in the woods, and it was a cloudy sky, and it was starting to rain. And there was a very dark cloud that came over our cabin, and all of a sudden this funnel-like tornado part of a cloud came down to the front porch, and on the end of it that was greeting us, it had a skull, and just any kind of skull that you would see, and it was hooked onto the tornado, which is hooked onto the black cloud. And I took that as a type of psychic greeting where we were attempted to be manipulated by fear. Mm-hmm. And so in the dream, I did the same thing I do in the waking state, is I sent the entity love and light. And turns out that resulted in it leaving, wasn't getting anywhere.
Hmm. I don't remember any dreaming that I had connected
okay.
with the negative entities.
All right. The last part of Joshua's question reads, what were some of the most significantly daunting periods of greeting? Also, anything else that you personally think would help those of us seeking to know more about these negs or greeters that upsets their methods of greeting the most?
Well, honest and all compassionate love seems to really bug them. They think it's rather sickening. But the thing about it is when you send it to them, you need to be sending it to them genuinely and not for the purpose of making them leave.
Yeah, just stay who you are, you know. Stay positive in your heart. Know that they, too, are part of the Creator, and you don't choose to follow what they have to offer or what they have to say. You, nevertheless, honor them as part of the Creator, wish them well in their seeking for the Creator, and let them go.
And as for the times of most likely a negative greeting was just before our session with Ra.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
It was it was a pretty good time to try to derail a session because right there it was coming up. And I don't know if we were any more vulnerable then or not. I would think we would be less vulnerable because we would be very tuned and dedicated to being of service. But I know that at one point the negatively oriented entity, probably the fifth density entity, was successful in causing Carla to lose consciousness, just, you know, to pass out, as if, you know, dizziness from vertigo. But Don and I couldn't tell that. We couldn't tell why she wasn't conscious. So for a while, I think we missed a session or two because we had to figure out what to do. And that's when Don came up with the banishing ritual of the lesser pentagram to use in the... both in the room in which we meditated before the session and in the session room, and do it on a regular basis. I believe it was a daily basis. So that would provide a wall of light through which the negative greeting would not be able to pass. So that was our response to that particular time being very likely for a greeting.
Yeah, what they were using was my dedication to the outcome of having a session. And so it intensified to where I was really, really meditating, and then I just conked out. I guess I went to sleep. And they were afraid to have a session, you know, wake me up and have a session. You're afraid that I would go to the wrong people or something, you know, that it wouldn't but they couldn't hold the circle of one together. And it was just, you know, they were using my desire to be of service and have this session, and the guy's desire to take care of me to form a really crazy-making conundrum. And I would be so mad at them. I would say, come on, you know, we can do this. No, no, we can't. You know, it's crazy because they wanted nothing more than to have a session, you know, and yet they were trying to talk me out of it. No, no, we can't do it. But, you know, you get into very funny situations when you're dealing with this kind of thing. And I don't know if I don't know just how unusual it is, but I think it's really very unusual that you would have the kind of situation that we had.
Yeah, we were sort of fooled by our ignorance. I'm not sure if that's the right way to put it, but Ra mentioned that Carla was able to provide this service as being an instrument without the type of training that is usually necessary. And I think that that training for people is probably, like Don and Carla and I, each would need that type of training to be really successful at dealing with the greetings at least more effectively. And I think that probably secret societies of ages gone past, the Brotherhood of the Seven Rays in Peru and the various other ones in the Himalayan mountains and so forth, that there are probably societies there and groups that engage in magical protective training and rituals that would be able to tell, for example, if Carla was just unconscious with her spirit present, or if her spirit had exited the body, or if her mind-body-spirit complex had exited the body and the care needed to be taken. In our case, since we didn't know that, we weren't trained and figure out a way, you know, a workaround, I guess you'd say in common computer terms. And our workaround was the banishing ritual of the lesser pentagram, rather than, you know, going through the years of training and study that would be necessary to determine, well, she's just unconscious.
And we remain true. I think that was very important.
Because our hearts were pure, we had the strength of 10.
Yeah, like that.
Gary, do you have any opinions on negative greeting?
No, thanks for asking.
The two things I think that you guys said that are really important is, one, what you experienced during the raw contact isn't necessarily the common type of negative greeting. It's a sort of really advanced level that I think would normally be happening, as you were kind of hinting at, Jim, that would be happening with people who were really into magical rituals, that would be doing highly polarized working that would attract these kinds of sources. And then the other thing is that Carla was talking about how the negative entities were using her desire to serve through these sessions and amplified that and amplified Don and Jim's desire to be of service to Carla. And the key point that I always feel is important about negative greetings is that they can only use aspects of yourself that you already have against you. They energize your own distortions. So even if there is an entity outside of you that is affecting you, a way to alleviate that and to understand what's happening is to turn inside. And while rituals and techniques that work on the outer source might help you do that and might be beneficial in some ways, I think as far as if a long-term strategy, you might say, as inner balancing and really focusing on inner knowledge and even using the psychic greetings to figure out what it is about yourself that might be imbalanced and then balance those aspects, and then you won't have these distortions that can be used against you to begin with.
Yeah, well said.
Thank you. All right, we have about 4 minutes left, probably enough time to talk about homecoming. This is one of our favorite times of the year. We have an annual symposium here in Louisville that will be taking place this year between August 29th and the 31st. We get about 40 people in the backyard. We have a lot of fun, lots of talking. We offer every attendee the chance to give a presentation on whatever interests them, whether it's spiritually oriented or just something that interests them. It ends up being a great mix of Law of One, spiritual and personal stuff that ends up happening. And it's just a really good opportunity to meet other seekers of a like mind. It's really sort of freeing to be in an environment where you can be so open with people like this. Anybody else have anything they could say about homecoming?
Oh, I would just say it's wonderfully fun. It's uplifting. It's energizing. Everybody, I think, has a wonderful time, whether they came to present or whether they came just to listen and hang. You end up loving everybody here, and everybody loves you. Who can resist such wonderful vibes? It's just so much fun. And the food's good. The company's good. It's just very worthwhile to be here and to take part in it. And we sure would enjoy having you come and be a part of it. We're not quite full yet, so until we're completely full, we're still open to bring in some more people in to the fun, because it really is just glorious fun.
And I have something to add about homecoming, and that's that if you do attend, please read the schedule, and please stick to the times on the schedule. That's all.
Yeah. Poor Gary spends the whole time trying to get the people that are normally a little bit lazy about keeping schedules, you know, on to times, because he doesn't want to begin, you know, a presentation until everybody's there. But if you don't begin at some point, you're going to lose the time completely. And we want to have enough. We definitely have plenty of time just to goof off and, you know, sit around and have conversations. I mean, a couple of lunch, 3 hours in between the last presentation and dinner or something like that. So, you know, there's plenty of time to do that. And so if there is a session going on, you know, get there. Or say you're not coming to that one. Let Gary know so that he can move.
All right. Any last words for our listeners, Carla?
We love you all, and we hope that if you have questions, you'll...
Absolutely. Thank you all for listening. You have been listening to LL Research in the Now, Q&A with Carla and Chris. If you've enjoyed the show, please visit our websites at llresearch.org and bringforth.org. Thank you so much for listening, and a special thank you to those who submitted questions. If you'd like to submit a question for us before the next show, please read the instructions on our page at blogtalkradio.com/LLResearch. Have a wonderful week. We'll be here next Tuesday at 1 p.m. Eastern, and we'll talk with you then.
I stare at a bright red sun, search all day and never find